Welcome to the Two Regular Teachers podcast. My name is Rick Kayla-Thompson.
And my name's Adam Lavaz. Thanks for joining us for episode 70. And on this sort of windy and stormy day, where we've got the, I don't know if you got a bit of the alert going out, Rick, but of the asthma that's been going around. And I wanted to ask you, as a man who gets hay fever at this time of the year, does the asthma sort of stuff affect you as well?
No.
It doesn't affect you at all?
No. I don't have asthma.
But it talks to me
like I'm a sickly child.
I'm not trying to say you're a sickly child or anything, but I know that I've had kids actually who it happened, and I've had parents come and say they actually took them in because they were wheezing and things. They'd never had asthmatic symptoms before, but they actually missed days because they had to go into sort of an emergency or hospital to be looked at.
It's been an interesting one, and for our listeners outside, I guess, Victoria and also outside the country, the latest huge... we had a big hot day about 2 weeks ago, didn't we?
Yes, yeah, it was.
And then really severe change with a thunderstorm, and apparently there are a lot of people who suffered severe asthma who were outdoors, and it did affect children.
It did.
It's a really interesting one, though, isn't it?
It is an interesting one, and why this has never happened in my lifetime.
Yes.
I've never heard of it ever happening before, and all of a sudden it's...
Well, we've suffered through hot weather and severe weather changes at school before, haven't we?
Yeah, we have. Yeah. And it's never kind of made up. So I don't know what it is, if it's the time of the year or what's in the air or climate change. But Rick,
well,
Who knows? But I know we wanted to talk about quickly, just before we get into our main topics, but we shared an article on Tuesday, a bit of a fun article, and I know you wanted to kind of have a chat about that.
Well, firstly, Adam, a fantastic article, and I know that was your idea, and an article by Danny Katz from The Age, who writes an opinion piece every Saturday in the Melbourne paper, and he is a funny man. I enjoy his articles.
It was very
all
funny.
The time.
Yeah.
And he was riffing on the last 2 weeks of school, wasn't he? And
he
what
was.
Happens, what teachers do, what principals do, what children do. And if you haven't been on, a lot of people hit up our Facebook page. We're really happy about that. Lots of people shared it, thank you, and commented. Thanks to all those people and some new listeners too. We hope that you're joining us for tonight's episode.
Absolutely.
But I want to take it at a different angle, Adam, because I really enjoyed it, and I know that Danny Katz is he's almost a comedian of sorts, so I'm certainly not I think his comedy was fantastic, but he was going on and being facetious and very funny about the stuff that, you know, and exaggerating
about
stuff that goes on in schools in the last 2 weeks. But I just want to have a small rant about when any kind of writer, whether it's an opinion piece or even just a fact-reported piece, in newspapers, on television, when anyone speaks of the teaching profession who is outside the profession, and we've mentioned this in briefly in previous podcasts, there seems to be a lack of knowledge and respect for what we do as teachers out there.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
And what I mean is that I think a lot of the jokes that Danny Katz made was quite valid, you know, because yes, we do some Christmas activities. Yes, some people get really burnt out and the queue's almost in the rack, so to speak. But I think our professional practice and knowledge is ignored a lot by writers. I think they're ill-informed. So, I mean, am I just doing Christmas activities? No. And what I mean, Adam, is that you and I have both been sifting through data. We've got lots of different processes and programs that we use to help analyze the data that the kids have produced.
Yep.
We've completed our reports where we've got to do our own review. I mean, I have to do readings of, you know, educational readings, which I'm happy to do. It's not really putting the feet up. There's no putting the feet up in the last 2 weeks. And I think often people say when teachers are doing extra work at home, we're talking about laminating or cutting out things. You know, and I know some of that goes on, but we are professionals and there's a lot of sophisticated stuff that we have to do, for want of a better term.
I think if that article was written 20 years ago, you'd agree with it. I think it's simply because, I mean, it was hilarious. I love some of the heavy metal references and things like that, but it was very much an article that would have fit in beautifully in 1994, when probably that did happen. That absolutely did happen, because there wasn't that amount of data, there wasn't that amount of extra work, there wasn't all those things going on. So you go, 2 weeks to go, just go for it, guys. And particularly, I think in high school, more than primary school, I think you would find that more in high school. I think you talk to them now that they're, you know, I talk to parents who have got high school kids, and they sort of say, oh, they're there next week, but it's all going to the movies or going to Adventure Park one day and doing all that sort of stuff. But there isn't a lot of respect for that further work. It's either a serious thing about, you know, all the things we're not necessarily doing, or it's a bit of that funny article looking at the funny side of things. There's not really that that analysation of all the other things that we do.
Yeah, and maybe I'm wrong, but and maybe I'm wrong by saying respect. Maybe it is just about knowledge, like lack of knowledge out there. So I know, and I did mention this earlier, Adam, at our DigiCon episode many months ago, that Mel Cashin did touch on this in her Spark talk about outside knowledge of the professionals that we are as teachers, and that it's still kind of seen as, you know, the old go home at 3:30 type thing. And so I guess I'm just touching on, you know, it'd be great to get out there how this is a professional job.
Because that article as well, even though it's comedian sort of article, it could change people's perceptions a little bit and think, yeah, this is all they're doing. Yeah, these last 2 weeks they're doing nothing and stuff. And
like it's fun and games.
Yeah, it's fun and games. Yeah, I don't know about you, but I spent my planning time today actually planning lessons pretty much for all of next week. Mm. I've got proper reading, writing and math lessons. Inquiry we're finishing off. We're doing all sorts of things that week. The Christmas activities will be interspersed in there or something. Like if there's a few writing activities that sort of have a bit of a Christmassy theme. But we're not just sitting there doing colouring in sheets. We're doing proper lessons. And I think, you know, parents and people can kind of read that and go, yeah, I know what that's like. Those, you know, bloody teachers doing nothing again and stuff. That's not actually what goes on. Like, I've got a fully planned lessons next week all the way through to the final day. So, yeah, but, I mean, you would hope that most people say that's a bit of a laugh and actually probably more spend their time thinking back to when they were in high school and things going, yep, that's exactly what happened. And I remember that PE teacher with the short shorts and all those things. Hopefully that's what they take it as. But those articles, if there's enough of them, can change the perception and not in a good way.
Yeah, and I look, overall, I had a great laugh. If you haven't seen the article, get on there. So for Adam, for our penultimate episode for 2016, I think it's time that we get into some of the other topics. Let's go. Well, Adam, I feel like as educators, we say this all the time, and that's there was another article about what's happening in schools in Finland in the paper. And I know you discovered something online over the past week.
I did. And I discovered, I guess, yet another article about Finland and how wonderful the Finland schools are. Now, I don't say that to be facetious and to kind of knock those schools, but it seems to be more and more and more that Finland as a whole, in the media, particularly for education over in Australia. And the article was written by Naomi Sarni, who...
A parent, I think,
from England, who went over and spent some time in a school over there to see, I guess, what all the fuss was about, why people talk it up. And obviously she came away absolutely blown away, I think, by Finland as a whole and the school and what they do and everything like that. And I thought it was worth talking about in that... Clearly in the media over here, I think this article is actually shared by the Australian Education Union. And I feel like often we see these articles about Finland and all the wonderful things they're doing, yet we're doing nothing about it. We're actually, there's constant talk about we need to be like Finland, we need to get there. And this is, they're doing this inquiry-based learning, they're doing all these sort of things, yet I feel like every time something changes in education, we're actually going in the opposite direction. We're almost pressing panic buttons going, we want to be like Finland, we want to be like Finland. But we don't actually want to do what they're doing. We actually want to go and we're bombarded with more things, more data and things, because there was a few good aspects of it that were spoken about. Rick, and did any of them stand out to you in terms of Finland as a whole and what they do that, you know, maybe we could be doing here, I guess?
Well, I agree with you. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of hearing about Finland.
It really is, yeah.
Because you can't take... Well, actually, I'll get to that in a second. The first thing is a positive. Mm. Yes, Adam, there's one thing that's mentioned is that teaching as a profession is held in very high esteem over there. And that is something that's definitely better than what it is here. And we mentioned that in the intro. We were talking about...
I think it's actually been mentioned that they hold it almost as high regard as doctors. Like, you have to be unbelievable to get in. It's a longer course. There's master's degrees. There's...
Well, this writer says it's a five-year course and that every teacher has a form of master's. So there is... I mean, I like the sound of that. I like that status. And so only the best people are really getting in to educate the future generations. But I do get tired from an Australian perspective and any other countries, I suppose. You're right. There's this whole sort of Finland. And we know, though, that you can't pick up a system and bring it... And this is very obvious, but you can't pick up a system and bring it to yours and just make it work.
Yep.
And as we know, it's like that with anything. Even if I get an idea off you about what from what you do in your classroom, it's not going to work exactly the same in my classroom. That's always annoyed me about the way Finland education system is reported in the Australian media.
Yeah, it is. And I kind of feel like there's almost like an underlying jealousy amongst the education department where they say, Finland's doing all these things really, really well. And then because they've kind of almost reinvented the wheel a little bit, haven't they? They've kind of brought these ideas in. They haven't almost taken it from anywhere else. They've kind of almost done these ideas themselves. And it's almost like the education department over here and people here have cracked the SADs and gone, well, we want to do the same thing. And so they're trying to almost, again, reinvent the wheel. And it's not working. It really isn't working. They're missing things that, you know, our results aren't that flash. I mean, if you go back to NatPlan earlier in the year and the results there, we kind of flattened out. We didn't go down, but we certainly didn't go up. So the things that they're bringing in are kind of missing the mark a little bit. But they're kind of... It's annoying because I feel like Finland have obviously got something that works. All right, the whole thing's not going to work for us, is it? And you mentioned that. You said we can't just pick it up and take it over. But clearly... there are elements of the teaching base and what they do there that could work anywhere. we're almost ignoring. And it kind of frustrates me a little bit.
Yeah, perhaps. And this woman has mentioned, this writer has mentioned a few things like that. Class sizes are small. There's teachers by first names, no uniform. I mean, I'm not sure if these things, those are things that would change academic progress. But she does mention a lot about the classrooms she visited on her tour were very calm, lack of tension. Now, yeah. I said to you off air, I know that my classroom is a relatively calm, yeah. fun place to be. I know that my kids are happy, and that is what I know I'm strong in. I'm strong in relationships. I believe I am, and I know that my kids are happy. I don't need someone to say in Finland the kids are happier. Now, anything that my students have to do that they don't like sometimes will come from above. I mean, national testing is an example, although some students do like it. But I don't like sort of being told, though, that that's better over there, because I think whatever each professional brings those skills to their own classroom, we get into teaching because we want to work with students. Yeah. I don't think it's something that you can just fail at.
Yep.
If you care about the kids, then you forge a good environment in your classroom.
So I'm going to throw you back that question, Nick, because you make a great point. And I would argue with you too, mate, that my classroom is a very happy, safe, fun environment.
Sure it is.
If we've got that as the same thing, where are we going wrong? Now, I know that's a loaded question, but if we've got those same sort of... We can build those relationships. We've got wonderful classrooms that the kids are coming in engaged and enjoying it. Why aren't our results as good? If Finland have got the same thing and their results are constantly top ranked, we've got these things going on, yet we're constantly, I guess, middle of the pack, for lack of a better word. What do you think? I know it's a loaded question, but what do you think we're missing? I mean, what could possibly... Where are we going wrong from the relationship aspect and that fun classroom to the testing point? What connection are we missing in the middle there that is having us be just middle of the pack sort of students on those results?
Well, that's hard.
It is a hard question, I know, and I'm sorry. It is a loaded question.
There are some aspects in the article that are clearly that outline how clearly different our classrooms are. There was talk about teaching is calm and collaborative. There doesn't seem to be much national testing. I'm just throwing a few things out there. But it does say that teaching is still very transmission style in Finland, or from what this writer saw, is that they saw the teachers standing there delivering the content. So if I was going to try and answer your question, I would say, like you mentioned in the intro, an inquiry-based, you know, investigative kind of a classroom where the kids are passionate about what they're learning would help increase the data. However, I don't know, and this is where I don't have an answer to this question, because... We have some formal aspects to our learning. We know that some schools in Australia are doing a fantastic job with inquiry stuff. I'm not sure. We are told that just pure transmission from teachers doesn't work anymore, yet something's working there. So to me then, and I don't want to throw it back, and I don't think you'll have an answer to this, is it just because we are different culturally? Is it just something with the whole system that goes back, you know, hundreds of years?
It could be. It could very well be. Or is it because we seem to change a lot? Is it because we don't sort of stick to one thing? Now, I did one thing that really stood out for me from the article is problem solving was very limited.
Yes.
They weren't expected to do a lot of that problem solving. And we're constantly told we want kids who are problem solvers, we want kids who do this sort of stuff. Yet, it's not going that far. Whereas they're not doing that, and they're kind of doing that, you know, the teacher really leading a lot of that stuff, and they're doing it. Clearly it works. So why do we have to constantly go away from that? Mm. I mean, we've got all these people up in higher positions going, you know, and I'm sick of hearing about people like Hattie. I'm sorry to say that, but it always comes up with John Hattie with his point system and all that stuff. It gets me because he says this is the way it's supposed to be done, and we're constantly embedding these things in Hattie and all this stuff, yet it doesn't seem to be making a huge difference to our results. It really doesn't, and I'm not saying Hattie's wrong.
In all places. I mean,
clearly no one's locking Finland. So Finland aren't having a lot of problem solving going on. No one's knocking them for it because their results are high. So there's got to be some validation that there's got to be something good and positive about what's going on there. And I know we could go on forever, mate. I know we've talked for enough, but it's a really good thing because I think Finland's brought up a lot, but they're almost teaching a little bit of old school. Would that be fair to say? There's a little bit of old school sort of teaching going on that we're trying to push ourselves away from.
Well, this article does suggest that. We probably need more concrete evidence, don't we? I mean, and this might only be a small sample that this writer experienced. So I guess let's throw it out there. I'm sure we've got some listeners that have read more and know more about what happens in Finland. And what are your opinions on it? Do we hear about it too much? And are Australian students as disadvantaged as what some of these PISA results seem to show?
So, mate, I'm going to say two words, and I want you to have a really good think about them. The two words are student files. Now, teachers know that at this time of the year, transition begins to happen, changeover begins to happen, and generally, particularly, obviously, if you move into a different year level, you don't have the same kids. If you stay in the same year level, you may end up with one or two, three or four. But it's time to start passing on those student files to next year's teacher so they have them ready to go. Now, I think what we wanted to discuss tonight was the, I guess the student files applicable today as they were, say, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, particularly with the discussions that teachers have these days with all of the data and all of that stuff that is online. I guess we could say, as in the worlds of the, in the words of the great Carl Pilkington, student files, do we need them?
Yeah, well, yeah. That's it, and well said. This is a question that you know that I've been wanting to tackle over the last week or so. Currently, our school and staff are in the midst of putting together and updating the student files. And we're talking about like a manila folder with paperwork in there that gets given to the next class. So to try and answer your question, I want to sort of give our listeners, I guess, a picture of what it's like maybe for us and see whether they have similar experiences. So I imagine back in the days when there was no such thing as a learning management system and storage, online storage, that the student file would have been all you had. Work samples go in there, any professional copies of things from maybe psychologist reports, what have you. So, and perhaps just some transitional statements would go to the following teacher for the next year. Now, my question is, when is it too much now with the amount of stories that we have online, with a lot of schools going down the learning management road system? For us, it's Central and other people Compass and some other sorts of ways, whether it's Google. So I'm currently putting sheets of paper into student files.
Sure.
There's also a learning management system that has a hell of a lot of data updated on where my students are at. There's the informal and formal meetings I have with the staff who have those students next year. They happen.
We just had ours recently too.
Where is the cutoff? Because I know personally that I don't find a lot of benefit unless I've got a student maybe that is on the spectrum or has some other things going in their life I need to look in their file. I don't go to that concrete file all so much, Adam. I mean, a lot of the work samples, I like to get them to do some stuff at the start of the year, which we have to do anyway, to see what it looks like at the start of the year. I want to get my own picture.
And to be perfectly honest, the one update that we had on Tuesday a couple of days ago, I actually had one activity which was a little bit an about me activity, and we talked about, they write down, it's like a little, I've got 1-2s again next year, so there was kind of like there's little sections with pictures in them, sort of like my favourite movie, I am such and such years old, because it was an opportunity to see how they write, how can they read, how can they do those things, what's their work like. The student files to me are almost redundant, I'm happy to say that. I think there could be a little file where maybe you've got a sheet, and it's a sheet maybe with some sections on there, so from prep through to grade 6, that maybe you go to your student and it's a quick 30 seconds of ticking or crossing. So if reading recovery that year, they have it, yes. Behaviour management plan, no. Go through that sort of stuff. I see the benefit in...
But would you look at, can I just cut in there? Because you mentioned a couple of things that resonated with me. Would you go into, so at the beginning of next year, would you open one of your students' files and pull out a reading assessment that was completed in 2016 and analyse it beforehand? Or would you just test that student, do some reading with them and make your judgment?
Look, I think I'll probably make my own judgment. I think I'd go with that. I think the only reason I think it's there is I think it may be good for teachers a few years down the track. Maybe if they've got a student who's finding things difficult, they can flick through back the file and go, okay, I've got a broader picture now. Reading recovery in year one, further intervention in year two. I can kind of understand where that's coming from, because you don't talk to those teachers.
No, but do you need all the paperwork from that?
No,
all the examples, do you just need a note?
I think you just need to know
they did reading recovery
because there's no relevance of something they did in year one in reading recovery to what they're doing in year four. There's no relevance. There's none to me, none at all. Oh, okay, they were struggling with blends. Well, that was 3 years ago. You just need to know, okay, they did it, therefore I know there's someone, that if they're finding things a little bit difficult, I know why, and I know that because they've had that, I know that I can maybe even use strategies that they might have used back in reading recovery, do all those sorts of things. I don't see why we need to constantly be putting sheet after sheet after sheet or assessments in there. That all goes online. I know for you guys, you use Central.
Yeah.
And we use SPA. It all goes on there.
Use both.
We use both. There you go. It's all there. So why do we need to then put it in a file as well? It makes little sense to me.
So for listeners who aren't sure with SPA, SPA is basically a data collection tool online where you can input all sorts of number data.
Fantastic. Yeah. It's fantastic.
Well, it gives you results. It can collate cohorts results and all sorts of things. But yeah, a lot of the stuff you said, I agree with, Adam. I mean, you and I have talked about the amount of admin jobs that have increased for teachers over the last few years. And to me, in this busy time at this end of the year, it's quite a time-consuming job. Mm. I even did some tonight, Adam, before we came home
record
the podcast.
There you go. That's commitment.
You know, filing things in students' files. And, you know, it's just an interesting question. I would really like to hear from all teachers, whether primary or secondary, what that looks like for you at your school. And I do wonder, and I'm going to kind of leave with this, I do wonder, though, how can the approach be streamlined? Now, we've talked about how we've got student files, concrete and online. Yeah. Is there a way to make it more efficient? How much information is too much information? And does an online copy suffice, or is it choice? Mm. Do you need concrete evidence, and does someone else not need that?
It's an interesting one. Is a student file something we just can't let go of, though? I want to kind of finish with that a little bit. Is it one of those things that we've had for a long time that schools just can't let go? Now, we need these student files. The only thing I think we need a student file is in the office. Pediatrician reports, psychologists, speech therapists, all those things could go in their own personal file in there that you could pop in and get if need be, but to be constantly passing those files to each other, are we holding on to something we've always done, or should we be letting go of those apron strings and moving into the 21st century?
I reckon that's a fantastic way to end, because I think schools are really good at keeping things in the process for a long time, sometimes just because that's what we've always done.
Absolutely, absolutely, that's the way it goes. So if you agree or disagree about student files and whether or not we should have them or streamline or not have them at all, we'd love to hear your feedback so we can follow this one up in further episodes.
Well, Adam, for our third topic, we're going to try something a little bit different. We've got an article that we've shared on the blog for this episode, and we, instead of discussing it, we'd like to put it out there as a question to our listeners.
Yes.
We'd like your opinion, your thoughts. It's an article that came from the Herald Sun, a Melbourne newspaper, and it's about favouring cursive handwriting over keyboard skills. Specifically, not just handwriting, but cursive handwriting. And I guess we want to put it out there. Even if you don't have time to read the article, what do you think? What's more important? Is it still important for students to learn, particularly primary students, cursive handwriting?
That's right. Or is it the keyboard
skills? Or is
it
more important to learn keyboard? Yeah. And let's talk about tablets. Is it more important just to be quick and efficient using a keyboard on an iPad?
But for those that may not have time to read the article, that was the crux of it, that they sent a bit of a survey out, and parents still really value cursive handwriting. And a lot of people were coming back saying, look, in 21st century learning and the modern life and teaching and whatnot, cursive handwriting potentially is not as important as it used to be. And do we need to just get rid of cursive handwriting and we just need to teach students to write legibly so they can spend time on those keyboard skills, because that's where it's going? It's a skill that we needed in 20 years' time and all those things. Or does cursive handwriting still have a place in classrooms today?
So let us know. And feel free also to say that whether this article even may have been a waste of time. Is it even worth talking about cursive handwriting? So we look forward to hearing some opinions. And if we get some really good ones and meaty ones, we may discuss them in next week's episode.
Well, mate, penultimate episode means it's your turn for the anecdote. It's over to you.
Thanks very much. Adam, today there was a student, this week, a student came to school and said to me in my class, said that they were going home early at 1 o'clock, which was our lunchtime. Now, this student had no note, and I won't go into too much detail for privacy reasons. Didn't have a note from mum and dad saying that, but they're a really passionate sort of student. They're not perennial liars or anything like that.
Sure.
Anyway, so about 1:45 rolled around, and this student really likes being organised, and when they know they've got to do something important like leaving early, they are pretty intense about packing up. So I allowed this student to pack up at about 1:45. No one showed up to pick him up at 1 o'clock, no note. And as the day went on, that continued. And I was getting little updates from this student every now and then to go, oh, Mr. KT, I think it's 2 o'clock. I think it's 2 o'clock now. I think they're coming at 2 o'clock. And I said, how do you know, though? No, I just think it's 2 o'clock. No evidence. So we got to 3:20, the end of the day. No pickup. Went home as normal. Stayed packed up for the entire day. Luckily, we had sport in the afternoon. Now, Adam,
did you feel slightly stupid? Well, did you feel slightly stupid in the fact that he packed up at 1, no one came, and you thought to yourself, I've been had? Or did you think for a moment you've been had, that he's kind of thought, What if I say I'm going home at 1 and I get packed up and he sat there and done no work for the rest of the day?
Yeah, that's a very fair question. Yeah. Luckily, we were at that stage where we basically just did a little bit of reading after lunch and then we had sport, so it was fine. But he's not the kind of student that tries to pull the wool over my eyes. But it got me thinking, Adam. It got me thinking about, you and I have riffed before in the podcast on sick bay and students leaving early. I want to talk about that whole process of getting students either packed up early and to the office or home. Now, the sick bay is an interesting one, Adam.
Sick bay is an interesting one. Before we move on to sick bay, how good are you at remembering if a kid's, like, there's a note in the diary, if there's a note in the diary saying, Miss Lavaz, I've just got to pick up such and such at 2, I'll come by, no worries, and then sort of stuff, and it gets to 2 o'clock, and there's quick, go and pack up.
Quick pack up. And then you feel guilty in front of the parents standing there, you're not packed up yet.
I'll find your diary for you. Get the diary out and do that sort of stuff. Every time I go, no worries. And then the parents, I kind of feel like the day goes on, the parents there. Every now and again, I'll remember. Every now and again, I'll just look at some kid and go, you'll be picked up in 10 minutes. Quick, go and pack up your things. I'll remember out of the blue. Most of the time, I forget.
Sometimes when I read it, if they hand the diary to me in the morning and read that message, I'll just hand them a whiteboard marker and say, go and write your name and write 2 p.m. on there. Or sometimes I'll just do it and it sits there and it's in their face. That always works, but many times I haven't done that. Yep. But Adam, we have a process at our school where if someone's feeling sick, you've actually got to fill out a little form in the classroom and send it with that student. To the office. Yep. So the office staff have got a clear message.
Yep.
Because they need clear messages, office staff.
They do. They do. You've got to keep them on side, mate.
Absolutely. And so they need a clear outline about what's happened. And you can be playing with fire there, Adam, because if a child's standing in front of you looking like they are about to pass out or whatever, and you're trying to fill out, Adam is feeling sicker, symptoms, they said 10 out of 10 headache. I mean, it can be absolutely really difficult. You know, this year, this is the reason why I bring this up, I'll finish with this. A student told me that they had a pain in the tummy and were doubled over at one point. Now, this is after about an hour of me saying, it doesn't sound like you're too bad. And they said, I think I can survive.
Yeah.
Came back in after I had to quickly duck out for a second and another teacher was watching. And this particular student was doubled over on the chair. And then I turned my back for like a second. I think I had some students working outside, probably 30 seconds. Came back in. This student was over by the whiteboard with one of those vomit bags. And just vomited in the bag.
Oh, now,
it was the cleanest one I've ever seen.
Really?
She got up calmly. She didn't say anything. She just walked over, grabbed the vomit bag, and filled it to the brim. I've never seen so much.
Wow.
But wow, what an organized spewer.
That's unbelievable, because normally you kind of sit there, and it's on you. She kind of went, it's almost like she sat there and went, it's happening. I'm just going to quietly, calmly walk over, get the bag, and off she went. And that's what that's good on her for doing that, because it could have ended up all over your whiteboard, all over your desk, and it could have been like a nuclear zone.
It was unbelievable. You know, I wished I had filmed it, or just something, it'd be something to show future generations.
Yeah, it's almost like the time on camp, I went to Sovereign Hill Camp, you know, where you get dressed up, and the kids aren't allowed to take water bottles. And one of the kids was so dehydrated, feeling so sick, that at dinner, he'd had his water and he thought, I'm going to spew. Grabbed his tall glass and spewed entirely into his water glass. Got it all in there. And thankfully, I just went to the waitress. So I said, just spew. She took it away for me. No worries. But he got it all in there.
That'd be some of the, probably the best high quality drink that the New York bakery at Sovereign Hills probably ever served up, Adam.
That's slightly
hello to our friends in Ballarat at Sovereign Hill.
Just pretend you don't know who we are, so next time we go there, don't poison our food. So if you've got any stories about that, it was a ripper, Rick, about the sick bay and sick kids in general, I suppose, and particularly even trying to pull the wool over your eyes, hit us up on Facebook, Twitter, or on the blog. We'd love to hear about it. So, mate, that brings an end to the penultimate episode, and we want to throw out just one quick final call. Obviously, we've got our Xmas episode next week, which is always a barnstormer, or a rip snorter, whatever you want to call it. We want to make a last call for anecdotes, topics, anything that you'd like to contribute. If you can, again, like I said at the end of the last topic, hit us up Facebook, Twitter, on the blog, send us a DM, like a recording, whatever it is you think you'd like to contribute. We'd love to have it on the final episode.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've got, at this stage, 3 special guests, Adam. You never know who might just throw their hat in the ring over the next week, but it's going to be a big episode. It will be an extended episode. Well, I can't believe we're almost there.
We're almost there, mate. So from me, Adam Lavaz.
Me, Rick Kayla Thompson, and we've both been 2 regular teachers.